It's To the Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Anne Strandchamps. In this hour, we're going to be talking about cartography, about maps, which have been largely unchanged for a long time. But here in the 21st century, something new is happening. For the first time in history, we are taking land off the map. In the South Pacific, entire islands have disappeared thanks to climate change. Here's Samoan journalist Lanipoeva Sherelle Jackson.
Lanipoeva means the sky of nine nights. So Lani is sky, Po is night, and Eva is nine, sky of nine nights. It signifies the number of nights that Tangaloa Langi, who is the traditional creator of the Samoan lands, had to sleep to gather the strength to build the island we're from, which is the island of Savai.
Lanipoeva was a child when the local cyclones started getting worse. Rising sea levels washed away the small barrier islands that protected her home, and eventually, people were forced to move.
A more recent example of communities in the Pacific that have migrated or disappeared due to sea level rise and the climate crisis would be in the Solomon Islands, where six islands disappeared due to sea level rise. There were about 20 to 25 families that were then migrated to Honiara, which is the capital of Solomon Islands.
The negative effect of intensified storms, rising sea levels, and ocean temperatures is being felt all over the world, but nowhere as strongly as in the South Pacific. The Marshall Islands are struggling to build new artificial barriers to block storms. Tuvalu's groundwater is contaminated by sea level rise. Most of the land in the Maldives is now less than 3 feet above sea level. Throughout the South Pacific, villages and entire tribes are being forced to abandon their ancestral islands. Which brings us back to Lanipoeva and the Solomon Islands.
They fully depend on fishing to sustain themselves and for livelihoods. So when you move them to a town area that doesn't have the same type of fisheries resources, you're basically taking away a lifestyle and also changing their diet and changing the way that they interact with each other. Because in fishing communities, there's a whole culture surrounding it. Women go out at 6 a.m. and sit in the water and dig out the pipis, the shellfish, right? And that's where they exchange information and they bond. So when you no longer are able to do that because you're now living in the slums in Honiara or in really close quarters in Honiara, you've essentially lost that part of your community and who you are. And your children will never live that experience. And so therefore, you've changed their lives from there onwards due to sea level rise. There's this particular fish that they like to eat, that they like to catch off the coast of their island, but they're no longer able to do that in Honiara. And now they have to buy like tinned fish. I mean, you lose these cultural practices that are built in to maintaining that fabric of that community. You no longer have that when you don't have the activities that go with it.
Lanipoeva Sherelle Jackson is a Samoan journalist, native to the island of Savai. She's documented the effects of climate change on the islands of the South Pacific in her podcast, called An Impossible Choice. And she sat down with Shannon Henry Kleiber to talk about what it means to be what she calls an island journalist.
Because nature is intrinsically part of you and of your upbringing. Our names, everything that we do as Samoans goes back to nature. It was only then very natural growing up and finding my passion in journalism to then view it from this perspective of nature and of conservation and of, you know, saving the precious resources that give life to the culture that we have. So without all of the natural interactions of nature, say the trees, how the wind caresses the leaves of the trees, how the sun glistens on the back of fish as they jump and turn in their natural migration. All of those things are part of the metaphors that make up our language in Samoa. And so therefore, without those natural things, without nature operating on its own natural progress, we wouldn't have those metaphors. And so it was natural for me to then focus on environmental reporting and climate journalism. So my perspective is different. It's unique in that as an island journalist, I can share the experiences of islanders and those living, let's be real, on the front lines of the climate crisis on a daily basis in a way that my colleagues in the global north may not necessarily be able to share.
Let's talk about geography and how climate change is altering the way we live. And I'm thinking about some maps I have. I have some historical maps, and throughout history, we think of things as adding. And now things are being subtracted, right, in maps. And we thought we were getting this clearer picture, and now this picture doesn't seem as clear anymore in maps. What does it mean for our culture and our society that places could be disappearing?
I mean, if you look at a map, and if you look at an island in the Pacific, a droplet of water is larger than your average island in the Pacific if you drop it on a map. As kids, we used to experiment and say, okay, the size of Samoa is maybe equivalent to maybe a gecko poo. As kids, you're trying to like compare the sizes. And for a long time, our islands were not on the maps to begin with, because they were too small or too insignificant at the time to be on the maps. And then it's only in the past, say, 20 years that we finally started seeing our countries, our islands, small as they were, on large world maps. To then get to the point where there is a very real possibility that we will once again not be on the maps and not by an oversight of cartography, but that of the reality that these islands, especially atoll nations of the Pacific, could viably disappear as a result of sea level rise and climate change. That is scary. Not just scary, but also extremely unfair for those who reside on those islands.
But what happens? I'm trying to picture an island doesn't just collapse on itself and fall into the sea, or does it? What does that mean when an island disappears from a map?
But what does it really mean, Shannon? That is such a deep question. What it means is that it's not just a physical movement of a people away from their homelands. It is the loss of ancestral knowledge, of a spiritual sense of belonging, and of an identity of a people. Mm-hmm. And it's just not one race. It is thousands of intrinsic and entrenched knowledge handed down by our ancestors. Those too will be gone if the lands go with it.
So if the people leave and the animals leave, where do they go?
So currently, international law has not set forth a precedent or a natural avenue for the people of the Pacific or those in atoll nations to find refuge. So there is no simple answer to that. Island nations have sought solutions for themselves. Some have created migration patterns uphill where they do have places to go to. Other islands like Kiribati and Tuvalu have bought land in, you know, bigger islands like Fiji, where they have larger land masses. So the volcanic islands like Fiji and like Samoa, they are secure to a certain degree. But your atoll nations like Tuvalu, Marshall Islands, Kiribati, they are the ones who are having to come up with solutions, with temporary measures to see where their people can go.
If the people leave, if they even think it's going to be uninhabitable, then it almost makes it uninhabitable, because if they leave, then there are no people there.
Exactly.
So can you tell me about someone, maybe one particular person who had this experience and whose story really sticks with you?
Vanessa Nieuwenhuizen, she's a mother whose entire home was wiped away in a matter of seconds during Cyclone Evan in Samoa. She lived on a floodplain with her husband and their children. And they had built for many years this small business. They had a little warehouse. And when the floodwaters came in, she had a moment where she had to decide, where they both looked at each other as they were grabbing their children, and the floodwaters were rising so fast and they were trying to climb up to the top of the building. She had a moment where she considered letting go of one of the children, and she didn't know, you know, as a mother, she was, you know, it's one of these things. And every time she tells me the story, she cries, and as any mother would.
She had to choose. She thought she would have to choose one of them.
Yeah, there's a split second where it's like, I can't carry both kids. I have to let one go in order for the other to survive and myself to survive. And she shares this story in the most heart-wrenching way. And so it was then, as they were sitting on the roof of their house, as the winds bellowed around them, and as the floodwaters took away their life's work, that they decided they were going to migrate to Australia. She lives there now with her children and her husband. But every day she says it's just not the same. You stand there and you just don't belong. But it is a conscious decision that she and her family made for the safety of their children, but also for a legitimate future that will continue to thrive without the threat of floodwaters or extreme weather events taking it away from them.
What do you wish more people knew about what was going on in those communities? You're bringing these stories to the forefront, but as we talked about, you don't hear it that often. What do you wish more people would know?
To be very honest with you, after spending this last 3 years in the U.S., I see a very, almost like this sense that the nuanced experiences of those in small island nations or communities that are very far from this place, they are not necessarily valued. And I understand that there's no validity or connection to, say, a New Yorker or someone from Wisconsin. But the reality is learning and knowing that there are entire villages, say in Tuvalu, once or twice a year, they have to carry their children, their pigs, their furniture, all their electronics, like the fridges and ovens and so forth. They have to raise them up and put them on roofs and on tables for a few days or up to a week because of king tides. Understanding that there are people who live within the parameters of the climate crisis, that the climate crisis has been real for many on islands for many, many years, but have never really been logical or a meaningful concern for the global north, because we don't hold the same influence in international spaces. You know, Pacific Islanders have been experiencing climate change and climate crisis for a long time, but have done the least to contribute to the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So if knowing these stories can make a difference, I really feel that's something that's powerful enough that climate journalists can do.
Right. And that it's not an answer just to say, migrate, move, leave.
No, it's very nuanced. In my work of interviewing people who are cultural leaders, ambassadors, political leaders, people don't want to move.
Yeah.
And it's not fair to suggest or provide a simple template for islands to move. It's not a natural thing. to say to the high chief who has governed his tribe or his village for years, following the footsteps of his father and his grandfather and so forth, it's not fair to tell him, okay, now you can come live in an apartment in South Auckland in New Zealand.
No.
That is robbing that person not just of their house, of their land, but of the mana or of that spirit that they have to protect and to continue handing over the ropes of leadership and of chiefly knowledge and of cultural knowledge to those who come after him or her.
If you move, it kind of feels like at least you're alive, but you've really lost enormous, enormous history and enormous cultural importance.
I mean, in the series I did with The Guardian on an impossible choice, we really looked at that question of it is an impossible choice. And Shannon, you put it really well in that you will live physically, right? You will be standing and walking and eating and doing the things you do as a human being to survive. But you will not have your family and your ancestral values and the spirit of the land that you come from.
Mm-hmm.
And I've written about this in the past. When someone dies in your family in Samoa and many other Polynesian cultures, we bury them on our land. And in some cases, in many cases, they bury them in the house because the dead is still a part of us. They're still a very much a part of us. And the land houses all of those spirits. If you can't move the ancestral bones, you also cannot move the spirit that comes with them. And so that's something you can't, that no scientist or anthropologist can gauge the level of loss when it comes to that sort of tangible cultural assets.
Right. And still, I think there is a lot of climate denial now and a lot of climate grief, a lot of good people just cannot get their mind around it, and it's too sad and too complicated. But in your work, what I think is so interesting is it still sounds very hopeful. How do you keep that hope in the face of it all?
There's two things you have to understand about Pacific Islanders. No, first of all, our cultures are governed by laughter and sarcasm and really inappropriate sarcasm sometimes. But two things come out of that very light-spirited people is that, one, we don't necessarily grieve like the global north does, or we don't necessarily have this like sense of great loss or trauma associated with the climate crisis, because when you live in that reality, you kind of just exist and survive each day as it comes, and you don't really have the luxury of time to question or to call power to account or to do all these things that come with the Western approach to grief or protest and so forth. So that's one, that grief is not necessarily associated with the loss, because that's the lived reality at this point.
Lanya Poeva Sherelle Jackson, speaking with Shannon Henry Kleiber. Lanya Poeva is a Samoan journalist native to the island of Savai and creator of an extraordinary podcast series about climate change in the South Pacific called An Impossible Choice. The link's on our website at ttbook.org. Takua.